it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I had somebody reach out to me about 2 weeks ago. That somebody was Matt Swope. Matt is the head baseball coach at the University of Maryland. Matt said, and he's a listener to the show, he said, you know who'd be great at film breakdown, almost like Cooley, is Steve Suter. You should ask him to do it. Steve Suter is a part of the Maryland football radio broadcast team. He and Johnny Holiday call the games. Steve's really good. I've had him on the show many times to talk Terps football, and he's a very good analyst. He's also fearless. He's far from a homer, and he's really good at analyzing football, and he is a big football fan and a lifelong Washington fan as well, although admittedly he's lost some of that passion in recent years, like a lot of us have, but he's back into it again with the results last year. So I asked him if he'd take a swing at breaking down the film from the All-22 and see how it went. He was on my podcast yesterday. He was so good. I'm going to play a portion of that for you right now, about 15 minutes, the very beginning of it, where he gives you kind of the whole layout of the game. He did get into grading players, and you know we can talk about that, and you can listen to it on my podcast. But I wanted you to hear Steve. He's really good. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it every week. It's a lot of work. Cooley used to tell me, he's like, it's basically an all-day thing if you're going to really do it right, you know, breaking down every play, every player on every play. But it started off yesterday on my podcast with me just getting his reaction after watching the All-22 of the loss in Green Bay.
So watching it on the broadcast first, obviously you get those normal impressions as you're watching the game. And I would say you either validate those watching the All-22 or sometimes that can change your mind. So I would say watch it on the broadcast. They just looked like they were outmatched, Washington, in all phases, offensively, defensively, and coaching. I had some question marks going in. I prepared, obviously. I watched the Giants game. Then I watched the Packers play the Lions. And what I got off of that was, wow, the Giants were very vanilla on defense. And I'm talking very vanilla. You saw cover three or you saw man coverage, and it was easy and obvious, and there was no extracurricular stuff in the secondary where they're making disguises and being extravagant and that nature. And so from that standpoint, they got probably 75% man coverage from the Giants. Very vanilla. Then I watched the Packers versus the Lions. Total opposite. A lot of zone and very detailed in the back end, secondary, and very extravagant, showing a lot of different shells. If they looked like they were in cover three, they weren't going to end up in cover three. It was a lot of rolling into different coverages. My thoughts were, too, going into the game. Is that because they're doing that because Jared Goff is a pocket passer and they're trying to make that picture at the back end different on the post-snap? And is the Giants, conversely, being very vanilla on defense because they're worried about keeping Jaden in the pocket? So those were things I was trying to pay attention to watching the game. Now, what happened was what the Packers did to the Lions. They were just very creative at the back end. They gave Jaden Daniels a lot of different pictures and everybody on offense, a lot of zone, almost no man coverage. A couple times they did, they brought pressure, they were successful. So now then you go into the All-22. I was very disappointed, I think, from the coach's standpoint. Clint Kingsbury just didn't seem prepared, in my opinion, because it was obvious what type of coverages they were going to run watching the line. So I'm not saying it's easy to decode the coverage live during the game. But you should have gone to that game, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, with 10 to 12 zone beaters for cover two and for cover three, because that's what you were going to see from the Packers. And then it was up to Jaden and the offense to decipher them. So they weren't prepared. I don't think so. The game plan wasn't good offensively. Defensively, they were very stale. They ran a lot of man coverage and way too easy to decipher for Jordan Love and the Packers. You could see during the game, they started bringing a lot of motion from the receivers, and in the corners, you know, Lattimore and the other guys from Washington are following him across the formation. Well, that's an easy tell that you're in man coverage. And once they were given that look to Jordan Love, it was easy pickings. So there's a lot of guys running open, and it's because the matchups of man coverage, the secondary of the Commanders, they weren't switching correctly. Sometimes they would switch, or what we would call banjo. So one guy's going to take the outside guy, the other guy's going to take the inside guy. Sometimes they tried to stay locked in on their guy, but the communication on the back end wasn't good. So they were messing that up occasionally, and when they were, Jordan Love was making them pay. What I took out from watching the All-22, Jordan Love is top-tier quarterback. Every mistake that the Commanders made on defense, and particularly one person or two who made a mistake each play, Jordan Love found it and capitalized on it. A lot of the big plays to craft were because the secondary were miscommunicating, and those little mistakes, Jordan Love found them and took care of them.
I think I'm curious first to ask you about the offense of side of the ball, where, you know, you talked about Detroit basically, you know, faced a Green Bay team that was heavy zone, and Cliff Kingsbury should have had more zone beaters against cover two and cover three in particular. How much of that was obvious that they weren't running stuff to beat zone versus the pass rush was very effective and they weren't able to get to it?
So, yeah, it's real easy for the defensive coordinator for the Packers right now, I think it's Halfley.
Yeah.
He's getting pressure without bringing pressure. And the best defenses every year in any level of football are the defense that can get pressure with the front four and they can drop seven in coverage. So he has that luxury, and I think it's probably going to be his game plan for the entire season, is to call his base defense, and I say base in air quotes because it's very complex in the back end, but up front it's only usually four people coming. And if he can continue all year going into each game getting pressure with his front four, then there's no reason to change. Every third down or so, he'll switch it up and he's going to bring some pressure because you're not expecting it because you're getting zoned. So he's going to have that luxury. The games where he's not getting pressure with the front four, he's going to have to change up. So what was successful for him is early on, he's calling these zone plays and he's having the secondary change and roll coverage, and his front four is getting pressure. So, he doesn't even have to think, right? His game plan's working. Stay the course, because Jaden Daniels isn't going to have enough time. So I'll use a specific example. They had this one coverage. It's really, really intricate. It looks like cover three. You got a deep middle safety, and they ran this against the Lions. I highlighted it because I even said there's no way that anybody can read this coverage correctly. It's just so intricate. Well, the deep middle third safety on the snap of the ball, he bolts down and becomes essentially a linebacker, and he's playing a curl zone there. And the two corners who you think are playing deep third, they turn into the two safeties, and they play the cover two safety. And so now they still have a cover two shell, but they're doing it from a really odd look. And I just think it's really difficult to read. So they did it against the Lions. It was successful. It gave Goff some problems. They never really completed the pass. Well, they did it on the first third down against Washington. So it turned out to be any time it was like third and eight or long, they were calling this play. So they did the first third down, and Jaden and them couldn't decipher it. They didn't have a play to beat it. They got pressure from the front four, and so you get an incomplete pass, and you got to punt the football. The second possession, third and seven and longer again, they ran the same inverted cover two, the same look. You would have think Kingsbury would call a play to think it's coming and have a beater for it. They didn't. That's another three and out. So they didn't have an answer for that coverage. One way to attack it, because essentially it's a cover two, is you can either attack it with depth, like you stretch it. We're taking four verticals, or we're taking four people deep, and we're going to try to isolate those safeties that have to try to cover four. But to do that, you need time for those routes to develop.
Right.
And what didn't they have? The Commanders, they didn't have the time. The front four is getting pressure. You know, it wasn't, you don't need a rocket science for me to tell you, you know, Micah Parsons was causing problems every time he was on the field, and everywhere he lined up, he was essentially, if not beating the Commanders' offensive line, he was getting pressure. So just not prepared from that standpoint. And then that type of thing just weighs on a quarterback. And I think during the course of the game, Jaden started just losing trust in his reads, losing trust reading the defense down the field. And then his play clock, his pocket clock was getting shorter and shorter because he didn't trust the offensive line to have protection. All those things add up. And then you go to an offense that's not effective and your quarterback's not reading the field correctly. And if he has a window, if he gets some, usually only one guy game, and he just couldn't find him. And like particularly the second, like second possession, I want to say it was, and the second play, Commanders go max protection. And they run a deep core, a deep comeback to McCullen, to Terry. It's a 18 yard comeback, and they're in max protection. There's only two people going on the route, so this ball is supposed to go to Terry. And Terry's open, and Jaden's looking at him, and for whatever reason, just dumps it off to Eckler on a check down. He just gives up on the play. So that right away was like, oh, man, Jaden's he's not seeing the field right, because this play was called to go there. We are blocking everybody to make sure we can get protection to send the ball over there, and he still didn't throw it, and he was open. That's a red flag. So you could just tell from that point on he wasn't comfortable in the pocket, didn't trust the plays. I agree with him. I didn't like the route concepts that I saw for most of the game. Just weren't in positions to be successful. And then the players on the outside, I mean, I'll be hard on the perimeter guys. You know, Zach Ertz, he looks, I mean, he looks rough out there at this age. I mean, he's been a great player for so long, but he just, I know he was the leading receiver too, and it's funny for me to say that. But other than the touchdown where he looked a little spry on his cut right after he caught the ball and got some yak and got in the end zone, not really an option for most of the game for Jaden. Terry, not really an option for him most of the game. Wasn't winning on man coverage. The zone routes he was on was either like a 5 yard curl, or he was running a deep corner and he just isn't getting down the field to stretch it. So really a perfect storm for the Commanders on offense. And then the offensive line didn't give him any help. We can get to that specifically, but Connerly was, he had a rough night. Almost 80% of the time, almost every time Micah lined up on him, he beat him, even if he didn't make the play. He was getting beat on his up and under routinely throughout the night. Gary got him on it as well. When they tried to help him with chips, they didn't work. Sometimes they chipped him and it made it worse, or Mike was splitting the double team anyway. Tunsil had a rough time on the edge too as well. We can get in. Those are my two lowest graded players on offense. It was Connerly by far, and then Tunsil was second there. Offensively, just didn't give him time. You can't let 4-man rushes just beat you. Right. If that's the case, you're not going to win. You got to be able to block against 4-man rush.
We'll get to the grades in the next segment, but I have to ask you, why didn't Cliff Kingsbury even attempt to run the football with their rookie running back Krosky Merritt? You know, his nickname, he wants to be called Bill Krosky Merritt. Why didn't they try to run the football more?
I couldn't answer that question because it didn't make sense to me. And what I wrote down, and I was texting a buddy of mine while I was watching the game live. I said, why has it? They did not call a draw for Daniels until the last play of the third quarter. And maybe you just take him for granted that Jaden's going to get you some rushing yards as a quarterback when he scrambles, and you count those as, you know, running plays for your quarterback. But that wasn't the case, and I was disappointed. When you're struggling to move the football and you've got a 4-man rush, a draw is a good call, a quarterback draw, especially with Jaden Daniels. The guy can't run, right? Because you're going to have the linebackers are already bailing. You know they're not blitzing. Because you're only going to have the 4-down linemen, and two of those guys are going to be able to get up to the second level. Utilize Jaden Daniels in the run game. Or you can call a draw as well and hand it off to Bill, like you mentioned. The draws work against those coverages when you have guys all line up on the line of scrimmage. They're trying to fake you out like we're bringing pressure, and then everybody bails, and we're only bringing four. Well, it's an easier job to get to the second level, so don't make the runs obvious. And you're in your 12, 13 personnel, and you're trying to load the box, and you're doing that zone read stuff. They didn't do the zone read effective either, in my opinion. Every person that they left unblocked for the Packers defense, when they left them unblocked, made the play. So the first zone read, they left Van Dess, they left him to Van be Ness. The yep. zone read. Yeah, he just knifes down and tackles Eckler. He didn't care about Jaden pulling the ball at all because it probably wasn't his responsibility. They got a linebacker ready for him. They don't block Gary, and next time they do a zone read and comes down the line and makes the tackle. And there's another occasion they're doing a zone read. They unblock the defender, and they make the play. So you need to have a better line. The Packers defense didn't respect Jaden Daniels as a runner for this game. And it could have been their game plan going in, saying we're going to play it straight up like he's a normal quarterback that can't scramble. And if he burns us maybe once or twice, then we might make an adjustment. But he never did. So they didn't have to make any adjustments. So it's, again, another easy game for Jeff Halfley to call, because the Commanders didn't do anything dynamic to make him have to, you know, go outside of what he wanted to do.
You know, you just brought up something that I talked about after the game, and it's funny because I think he had some issues with this last week against the Giants and a couple of times last year. It's been very hard to find anything super critical, you know, constructively critical on Jaden over his first, you know, 22 NFL games. But the zone read they ran early in the first quarter, where, as you said, N crashed down, didn't play Jaden at all, I thought it was very obvious that Jaden made the wrong decision. You got to pull that on that play, right?
Agreed. Yeah. So I write down, you know, that's my note. I watch the play, and you say he's got to pull that. But, you know, I'm not in the huddle. You assume, and you assume it was a zone read, but that's not always the case.
Right.
And sometimes it is always a handoff.
Right.
Maybe he's not reading that. But, and I only say that because I'm pretty sure it was Zach Ertz who was to the left, who was blocking. So if he pulled it, Zach Ertz was there to block the DN, not Van Ness, but the other DN. So that's why I thought it's the zone read, because he still has a blocker out there for in case he pulls it. So I agree. That was a pull all the way. Van Ness didn't care about Jaden, and I think that's, again, that just reiterated my thought, right? That was their game plan going in, and the Packers, we're not going to respect him as a runner until he beats us. So, yes, Jaden probably made the mistake there, should have pulled, and, you know, maybe they just stopped calling it out.
That was Steve Suter doing a film breakdown. There was a lot more to it. You can hear it on my podcast. He was very, very critical of the play calling, the game plan, the readiness of Kingsbury in the offense, and he really got after Joe Witt Jr. in the defensive game plan as well. And, you know, netting it out, he came away very impressed with the Packers, Jordan Love in particular. But pretty good at doing this, and he gets into the players in more detail and grades them out, grades Jaden's performance, which he said was not very good, but he didn't get much help anywhere also. All right, that segment with Steve is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Football Talk is presented by Paramount Plus on this show. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've been thinking about new windows, Window Nation is the answer. It's my recommendation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Their deal right now is the most popular that they offer during the course of the year. It's buy two windows, get the next two free, and they give you the option of not paying anything for two full years. So no down payment, no payments, and no interest charged until the year 2027. It all starts with a free, no obligation in-home estimate. So if you've been talking about new windows because you've got older windows, you're paying too much for heating and air conditioning because the windows you have are old and not very well insulated, just get the estimate from Window Nation. Have them come out. They'll actually identify for you which windows need to be replaced. It'll happen in an hour or less. It'll happen when it's convenient for you. Just call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com for a free in-home, no obligation, no pressure estimate. If you choose to move forward with Window Nation after being left with the offer, with the quote, with the estimate, you'll work with an unbelievable company when it comes to their product, their customer service. They were recently ranked highest on Forbes' list of best window installation companies in America. They've got over 45,000 five-star reviews, and you're going to get a phenomenal deal. Two free windows with every two purchased, meaning you're getting half price on the windows, and you don't have to pay anything until the year 2027. Don't miss out. This offer won't last long. Call them today, 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. So yesterday, there was a ton of injury news. Joe Burrow done for the year. J.J. McCarthy probably out for 2 to 4 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Maybe that explains his trouble on Sunday night, because he was truly awful. Looked like he couldn't play the position. And maybe it's an injury, or maybe it's just that it was his second game. You know, in Cincinnati, there was a lot of discussion yesterday about potentially reaching out to Minnesota for Kirk Cousins. They're probably not going to do that. They're probably going to go with Jake Browning. They signed Mike White and Sean Clifford, former Penn State quarterback, to their practice squad. The Bengals are off to a 2-0 start, but without Burrow, I can't imagine by the time he might be healthy enough to return sometime in December, are they really still going to be in playoff contention with Jake Browning? The answer in Minnesota for the next 2 to 4 weeks, Carson Wentz. Yeah, Carson Wentz is going to be starting at quarterback this coming Sunday. By the way, in a game against, yes, Cincinnati and Jake Browning. Not exactly an attractive matchup. Vikings also, there are discussions out there about whether or not they will reach out to Atlanta to bring Cousins back. But the J.J. McCarthy injury does not look like it's season long. It's 2 to 4 weeks. Meantime, Vic Fangio, the Eagles defensive coordinator, called out Jalen Carter. After Jalen Carter played in his first game of the year, after being tossed in the opener against the Cowboys, he said he played a very good game, was complimentary about his game, but said he needs to round into form conditioning-wise. Jalen Carter perhaps not in great shape. The Browns are going to stick with Flacco. They're not going to go with Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. Jadeveon Clowney, if you missed this from over the weekend, he signed with the Cowboys. So there you go. A lot of NFL news from yesterday, including last night, coming out of the Monday night game in Vegas. Tom Brady, on the broadcast, was shown in the coach's booth with a headset on. If you didn't know this, Tom Brady is an owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. This has been a conversation, you know, going back to when he took the Fox job, the incredibly, you know, lucrative job to be the Fox number one team game analyst of course, Kevin Burkhardt on Fox, called the Super Bowl last year. Lot of conflict of interest, you know, with Brady and the access he gets to the teams that he will be calling games for, and the fact that he is an owner for a team. Well, last night, in addition to him being much more involved than I think a lot of people knew, it was reported by Peter Schrager at ESPN that Brady talks with offensive coordinator Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week. Now, Pete Carroll disputed the frequency of the conversations with Chip Kelly, but did not deny that they both talk to Brady on a weekly basis. Now, is Tom Brady talking to teams, calling games of teams, and then using the information that he has to help the Raiders? I don't know if that's true or not. I'll guess that it's not true. I'll guess that he is stand-up, honorable, and isn't taking information to help his team's cause. But it really doesn't matter because the perception, the optics around this are terrible. Now that we know he is intimately involved as an owner in the Raiders organization, sitting in the coach's booth last night, talking to Chip Kelly and to Pete Carroll multiple times per week. And why wouldn't you if you had Tom Brady as an owner in the organization? Well, there's a problem with that because the NFL relaxed the Brady rules this year. Going into this season, or going into last season, he was not permitted to be in another team's facility, still isn't, was not permitted to witness team practices, still isn't, and was not allowed to attend the broadcast production meetings and interviews with coaches and players in person or virtually. Well, that changed. Because he is now allowed in those very close interviews in which the broadcast teams typically get more than anybody else gets. We've talked about this for years. Coaches and players in that atmosphere tend to open up to former players, former coaches, more than they do in their weekly press conferences. And that's why it's always interesting to listen to the broadcast, to listen to not only the game analyst, but the play-by-play guy, because if they don't say it directly, sometimes they'll imply things that they've learned from the horse's mouth, the coaches, the quarterback, the key player on defense, the defensive coordinator, about what's going on within the framework of the team, and stuff that typically you don't get divulged in other, in other formats, you know, weekly press conferences, etc. Brady's now, this year, they relaxed the rules, allowing him, not in person, but virtually via Zoom or any other virtual connection, to attend those production meetings with the play-by-play guy, with the producers of the games, in the interviewing of coaches and players for those teams. Now, those players and those coaches, they don't have to say anything. They can be completely vanilla in their answers and keep everything from Tom Brady so that he doesn't learn anything for the benefit of the broadcast that he will be involved in. But here's the problem. Is that the perception, more so than ever after last night, seeing Brady, hearing the report that he talks to Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll multiple times per week, Brady doing these games and getting access to coaches and players virtually, not in person, he's not able to watch practices, but he can probably learn a lot about the practices, even in those interviews, because other people as part of the broadcast team have access to that. There is the perception that he now is giving the Raiders some sort of competitive advantage when they play a team in which Brady's already called one of their games. Example, Brady called the opener between Washington and the Giants. Well, guess who comes into Landover Sunday? The Raiders. He is going to call Sunday afternoon Cowboys and Bears in the 425 window on Fox. Guess who plays the Bears the following week? The Raiders. Now, again, I'm not being accusatory, and in fact, I'd probably lean in the direction that Brady's not immediately, when he gets done interviewing Ben, you know, Ben Johnson as an example, or, you know, from the Skins game, Dan Quinn or Jaden Daniels, that he's immediately getting onto the phone and telling Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll, hey, here's what I learned from these guys about what they're doing offensively, or, you know, it is a game by game basis, and the game plan for the game against the Giants may be different from the Raider game, but he can learn a lot about the teams through those conversations, and maybe if it's not a lot, maybe it's just a little bit that could be a competitive advantage. I'm not accusing him of getting on the phone immediately and sharing that with the Raiders coaching staff and the Raiders organization, but it doesn't really matter whether he is or isn't. The perception is that he might be. Bad look for the NFL. Bad optics for the NFL. They should immediately eliminate what they eliminated last year, but they relaxed the rules on this year, and that is his ability to participate, even virtually, in these production meetings, in these interviews with coaches and with players, where he can really, as Tom Brady especially, you know, sometimes it's Tom Brady I'm talking to. I want to give him a lot. I want to help him out. I love this conversation with the GOAT. I don't think that he should be allowed in those meetings. Go ahead, show up, call the games. You know what? Most people don't pick up on what the lead analyst in the game, you know, got from a coach or from a quarterback or from a coordinator. You got to be really into that team and understand that there might be something going on. And oh, by the way, Brady just gave us some information on what's going on behind the scenes. That is a small percentage of the people watching the game. People like Tom Brady, a lot of casual fans like Tom Brady. And if he just shows up and calls the game, that should be enough. I don't think it's going to hurt his ability to call the game. Or let me say, I don't think it's going to hurt the response to him calling the game. He might feel like he's at a disadvantage calling the game, but the ultimate output for 85 to 90% of the audience isn't going to look or feel or sound any different. But I don't think the NFL should be allowing Brady to participate in these coaches' production meetings, these coach, player, coordinator production meetings. They should go back to last year's rules and give him no access, none. If Fox wants to continue to pay him to show up and call these games, not a problem. But he should not be given access, not because he's definitely using it, but because the perception is that he could be. The optics on this are terrible for the league. They need to fix it and fix it immediately. All right, when we come back, I want to play something that Dan Quinn said about the game Thursday night that I thought was rather telling. And also, we will take a few more calls if you want to weigh in on Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels is day-to-day with a sprained knee. It does appear right now that there's a chance he could miss the game on Sunday. Do you think he will? Yes or no? What's your hunch? And then what, if anything, can be done to minimize the number of hits that Jaden's been taking? If you didn't get in on the calls last hour and you want to weigh in on this, 301-230-0980. Kevin Sciancio, the Team 980, the team980.com. Don't forget, you can watch us on our Team 980 YouTube page. You can just open up the Odyssey app, type in Team 980, and hit subscribe, and you're there.
All right. Happy Tuesday. It is September 16th. Here's what's happening in the world of DC sports. Dan Quinn announced yesterday that Jaden Daniels had an MRI after Thursday Night Football versus the Packers and is day-to-day with a knee sprain, putting his status for Sunday in jeopardy. And the Nats, they fall to the Braves last night by a score of 11-3. Tough night for Mitch Parker as he goes five innings. He pitches five innings, giving up 10 hits and six earned runs. The Nats will reset for a doubleheader versus Atlanta today. First game at 105. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave right now on 106.7 The Fan. Jake Irvin on the bump for Washington. Nats on deck again with Charlie and Dave at 12:35. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, yes. Yes, Max, I'm going to throw to it. Dan Quinn met with media yesterday, and, you know, big emphasis of the press conference yesterday was on Jaden Daniels. But there was an interesting question that I think David Aldridge asked him that got him into an answer that I'm not even sure had a lot to do with the question. DA asked him about the O-line and what he thought of the offensive line and the struggles on Thursday night. Here's what Quinn said.
Yeah, I really felt like it was almost like a repeat from Detroit. You know, they got out ahead, and I didn't like how we started, you know, really on either side of the ball. David, to say, I think you have to go back and look. It was either two punts or three punts, you know, on our first two or three possessions. They drove down some, so I didn't love the way that we started. As bad as it felt, as we got into the start of the fourth quarter, you're down a touchdown. Okay, we stayed in the fight. As bad as it felt, we didn't hit on a field goal at the end of half. We missed on a good return coming out of the half, so I thought our complementary football back and forth wasn't right. And then when it got to the two scores, then you're back throwing it all, you know, to try to catch up again. So I thought, all right, can we stay in this fight? Here's our time to go take our shot. They went down to score, and that's where I thought the game changed, man, where we had one shot to go fight for it. Didn't love our balance, honestly, to go, you know, that many runs and passes. At the half, there wasn't a lot of plays, so it looks at the end of the game way higher in the passing, which is not what you want to do against a team that's rushing and going. But I just didn't love, you know, on both sides the way we started. That's what I like. You know, there are things that I liked, you know, took care of the ball, you know, those things. But just in terms of just jumping on them and being aggressive from the start, Dave, that's the thing I didn't love.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, the admission there about didn't like the balance, the run-pass balance, was without question very interesting. You know, they ran the ball 9 times for 34 yards in the first half, but some of those were scrambles. I mean, you know, they came out, they threw Jaden, first two plays from scrimmage was a Jaden Daniels short pass. Jaden Daniels pressured, ended up getting sacked, and then a third pass. So no runs on the first possession. That was 3 and out. Second possession, they did try to run Eckler twice, which set up a third and 7, and then they ended up getting an illegal use of the hands. They were in 3rd and 17. They had to punt there, which was a 3 and out situation. The next possession, it was pass, play, scramble, pass, punt. So when he says that there weren't a lot of plays, that was a 6-play opportunity with a first down. Then they came back, and that was the Kroski Merritt first drive, and he gains five yards on the first carry. Then it's pass, Kroski Merritt again, pass play, field goal, which they made, which was good. And then, you know, the disastrous end to the first half where they got very conservative. They called a pass play, then Eckler twice. And it was this. It was if they did not have confidence in trying to go for a score. But I think the idea that they didn't have a lot of opportunities in the first half, they had, you know, five drives in the first half. That's a lot of opportunities. That's a lot of possession opportunities in a first half. Or let me just say, it's not a minimal number of opportunities, five opportunities. But I thought it was interesting that he did admit in that particular answer about the O-line performance that they didn't, you know, that they got away from any, you know, sort of semblance of balance. And, you know, the score does get sideways, but not until the fourth quarter. You know, when they 14-3 is not a sideways score. It doesn't get you out of your game plan if your game plan is to try to run the football, or at least have running the football as an option in the game. It's 17-10, you know, early in the fourth quarter, and got to 24-10. Understood after that, you know, that you're just, you know, dropping Jaden back, trying to make something happen. But look, I think it's also important to acknowledge that against that team and without Bates, you know, because he left early, that it's very possible that Kliff didn't think they'd have any success trying to run the football with Kroski Merritt or with Eckler or with anybody else in the game. And that their best chance, even though they couldn't protect and even though the receivers weren't necessarily getting open consistently, was to still, you know, have your quarterback and have the ball in his hands. Because let's face it, we've got a history here, 21 games going into last Thursday night, of if the ball's in his hands, more times than not, he's going to come up with a solution. He'll come up with an answer to a tough situation against a tough opponent. We've seen it over and over again. So, yeah, I get that, you know, falling back on, it's still better for us if the ball is in Jaden's hands. You know, last year in that Pittsburgh game, remember that game? They couldn't really run the football very effectively in that game. And they put the ball into Jaden's hands, and it was not his best game. Far from it. Had, I think, his highest incompletion percentage. Pittsburgh's defense really got after him, sacked him. But he made enough plays along the way to keep them in that game, you know, give them the lead, remember, in that game when they were down 10. When they were down four, they took a 10-point lead in that game with Jaden making play after play, only to lose it late on the Mike Williams touchdown catch over Benjamin St. Just, who, by the way, was on the field last night for the Chargers. Jeremy Chin was on the field last night in that Chargers-Raiders game. So 2/4 of the secondary played in that late Monday night game. Just interesting to hear Quinn, who typically you don't get that kind of an admission, but he would have liked to have seen, I think, a better balance. Again, may not have worked. May not have. Good reasons for them not to try it. Bates isn't in the game. Jaden's been a hero before. Let's go the route of Jaden, you know, avoiding this bum rush, which comes quickly, and making some plays along the way. Gary in Upper Marlboro wants to weigh in on Jaden's availability Sunday, and if you've got a solution to minimizing the number of times he gets hit in games. Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you. I don't think he's going to play on Sunday, and I think that's the right move because Jaden hasn't shown in this brief period sample size that he's going to play at his best when he's banged up. I think the three games that they lost in a row last year, at least the scuttlebutt was that he was not fully healthy. And I don't think Jaden played up, you know, that well last year. So it's too early in season to aggravate an injury. It's better to get him at full strength and then let him come back. And one thing I would do with Jaden, I would take those design runs out of the game plan. I just think that puts him too much at risk. And people say, well, Lamar Jackson plays that way. Well, Lamar Jackson is a quarterback that runs like a running back, in my opinion. Jaden is a quarterback that can run. And the difference is that I think Lamar has more of an instinct to protect himself than Jaden. Jaden runs really upright. And I can't tell you how many times when I've seen him run where the defender just misses getting a real big hit on him because he's running so upright. So I think they need to modify the game plan. And that's real quick on Tom Brady. People forget that Tom Brady was part of Deflategate, okay, and all that stuff that happened. So I don't have any confidence that he is going to put up a wall between the Raiders and the information that he's getting from other teams. So I agree with you 100%.
They've got to cut off his access completely. You know, they relaxed the rules on him this summer. They can't give him access to coaches, players, and coordinators anymore before these broadcasts, period. He can show up and call the games, and that's it. Yep. I completely agree.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. You know, back to last year, I don't feel like going down the road about just talking about, did he have a broken rib, didn't he? My gut is that it wasn't broken ribs or a broken rib. Sore, no doubt, but pain threshold different than a knee injury, etc. They let him play against Chicago. Let's not forget that, you know, if he really was at risk, they ran him a lot, you know. I mean, that's just, I said it in the moment last year, like, that's negligence. If he legitimately was hurt and at risk, they didn't hold back on the game plan. In fact, the Giant game, which was the second game after the injury, the Hail Mary game was the first. QBR-wise, it was, you know, the second best game of the regular season for him. 95.1 QBR, ran it 8 times for 35 yards, 15 of 22, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He was outstanding in that game. Yeah, the Pittsburgh game was not his best game. The Philadelphia game on short turnaround was obviously not his best game. But they didn't hold off on, you know, designed option runs or tell him, you know, get rid of the ball. We don't want to see you running around. That's my only problem with going back to that and talking as if, you know, he didn't, you know, he was so hurt, shouldn't have played, or that he didn't play well. Because the Giant game, which was, you know, the next closest game to the injury game, was one of the best games he had all year. Steve in Rockville. Steve, finish it up for us. Do you think he'll play on Sunday? And do you think there's a solution to minimizing the number of times he gets hit?
Long time listener, first time caller, Kevin.
Thanks, Steve.
I do not think he'll play. I don't think he should. And solution, don't be on the field. I know Paulie said this earlier today. Don't be on the field with 4 minutes to go down by 17 points. It's been a pet peeve with me forever. Washington is not the only team that does this. Why are you playing your guys when you're down by that much or ahead? Get your players out of there. And I know you agreed with Paulie. I'm pretty sure you did. But that's my thought on that. And why they're in there? And look at Eckler and the lineman there. I can't think of his name at the moment. But why were they in there? I know Eckler hit a Achilles. He didn't hit anybody, but he was in the game. Yeah.
There is absolutely a fair argument for, you know, down 27-10. And by the way, the context of the 27-10, your quarterback is getting absolutely blown up on every other play. Your right tackle is losing confidence by the second. You're not going to win that football game with 6 minutes to go down 27-10. You're just not. There are some games, you know, that you might be in. Let's just say it's 45-28 and it's been an up and down the field game and nobody can stop the other. You probably want to take your swing. Like, let's get in the end zone quick, make it 45-35 and see what happens. The other night, there's a really good case for Marcus Mariota should have been in there, especially if they knew that hit to the knee in the fourth quarter, on the first play of the fourth quarter, was, that had him hobbling. I didn't see him hobbling until he rolled the ankle on that final drive. But he rolled the ankle on the final drive trying to make play in a game in which they weren't going to win. I'm with you. I think that is 100% right. I got to roll. Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it. I'm up against it. Thanks to Tom Shad, who joined us for the first time on the show. He is the new beat reporter for the Washington Post covering the team. And thanks to Steve Suter. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell's up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know
the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.